Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh talks in Greece. Socrates present again after 25 centuries. Discourse number 7, on the 22nd of February, 1986, p.m.
Bhagwan, these questions are from AP, UPI, and Reuters news agencies. The first question, can you tell us why, as an admirer of Socrates, you don't practice the Socrates method of dialogue?
Dialogue is possible between two blind men. They can discuss ad infinitum about life without coming to any conclusion. The dialogue is impossible between two persons who can see the light. The dialogue is unnecessary. Light is the experience of force. The only possibility, the third, is that one man may be able to see the light and the other may be blind. What kind of dialogue do you think is possible between these two? Socrates was not an enlightened person. A great philosopher, a great logician, but not an enlightened person, not a man with eyes. Gautama Buddha has no dialogue. He knows. There is no question of discussing about. You can sit silently with him. Even in his silence, there will be a communication. Or you can ask a question to him, and he will respond spontaneously. No enlightened person in the whole world has ever used the method of dialogue. That's the reason why I cannot use it. If you know it, if you have a serious the truth, then we can sit in silence. There is no need to say anything. It happened in India two enlightened people met, remained together for 2 days. One was Kabir, the famous poet, and the other was Farid, a Sufi mystic. Their disciples wanted them to talk to each other so they can listen. But for 2 days, not a single word passed between Kabir and Farid. They hugged each other. They smiled at each other. They looked into each other's eyes. They were seen holding each other's hands. Tears of joy were seen flowing from both. And after 2 days, they departed with another loving hug. But not a single word. And when the disciples of Kabir asked him, "What happened? You have always been talking to us and we wanted to listen. What happened? What transpires between two enlightened persons?" And Kabir said, "You have seen what happened. What transpires between two persons who have realized the truth? There is nothing to say. And the same was the situation with the disciples of Farid. They were angry that 2 days you wasted. And we waited and waited and were simply bored. Why did not you say something?" And Farid said, "Any one of us who had started speaking would have shown that he does not know yet." That realization, that enlightenment is beyond words. You know it. You can express it through tears, through song, through dance, but not through dialogue. Socrates has a beautiful method of dialogue, but that method is useful only for blind people. And in the West, unfortunately, the experience of enlightenment has not happened. It is just the same as in the East, the science has not reached to its peaks. In the West, spirituality has not reached to its peak. Both are half. And because of this division, man is divided. My effort is to create a synthesis, to bring one unity between the materialistic scientific approach of the West and the spiritual meditative approach of the East. That will make man complete, whole. And to be whole is the only way to be holy. There is no other way. I have nothing to say to you unless you ask. If you ask, then spontaneously I respond. I am not prepared for it. If you don't ask, then there is nothing from my side to be said to you. Then we can sit in silence. If you can understand silence, then there is no need for language to be brought in. This is the reason why I do not use Socratic dialogue.
Bhagwan, can you comment on President Ronald Reagan's performance as a politician?
No.
Are you disappointed with your experience in the United States?
Not disappointed, but disillusioned. I used to think that America is really a democracy. It is not. It is hypocrisy. The people are beautiful. The land is beautiful. But the government, the bureaucracy, is simply fascist. Having a mask of democracy, I am not disappointed. I simply discovered the truth. I have seen the American politician, the bureaucrat, in its original face. Just one instance I will give to you. They arrested me without any warrant, just on the point of 12 loaded guns. And I asked them, is it democratic? You don't have any arrest warrant. At least verbally you can say to me, what is the cause? What crime I have committed? Or do you think your guns are the only answer? And they said, we don't know anything. We are simply following orders from above. They took me into jail, and the U.S. Marshal asked me to sign under a false name. He gave me the name David Washington, that in the jail you will be known by the name David Washington. I said, this seems to be absolutely illegal and criminal. First you arrest me without any warrant, and now you are telling me that I am David Washington. I am not going to sign. He said, this will be unnecessary trouble. You will have to sit here in the office whole night without sleeping, and I will have to sit with you. I said, you please tell me what is the reason, why should I sign under a false name? Is there some law? I have my own name, and I am ready to sign my own name. But why are you afraid of my name? Don't you see I can understand the implications? That even if you kill me inside the jail, there will be no proof that I was ever entered into the jail. There was no arrest warrant. So I was never arrested. And in the jail there was no entry of any person of my name. So you can simply poison me. You can kill me, you can do anything. And this country you go on calling democracy. In those 12 days, they had to take me to 5 prisons for the simple reason because whatever they wanted to do, they could not do. In one prison, so they shifted me to another prison, and there was no reason. The journey from the place they had arrested me to Portland was not more than 6 to 8 hours. They took 12 days. And that too because of the news media. Otherwise they may have taken 12 years. And in each jail I came across fascist attitudes. In the second jail, they put me with a person who was living alone for 6 months in the cell because he was dying with confirmed herpes. And the doctor of the jail has not allowed anybody else to be put with the man because herpes are so infectious, and once you get them, There is no medicine, no cure. You have to suffer them your whole life. And the doctor was present, and the jailer was present, U.S. Marshal was present, and they put me into that cell. That dying man was more democratic and more human. As they went away, he told me that you don't know why they have put you here. Bhagwan, they want to kill you. This is an indirect way. I am dying. And everything here can be an infection. I have lived 6 months in this room. You should immediately call them back and ask that why 6 months they have been not allowing anybody, and now suddenly even the doctor is silent. I had to knock the doors almost half an hour. Since somebody appears, and I think that I want the doctor to be here, and the jailer, and I want an explanation. Immediately I was transferred to another jail. In every jail they did something which is inhuman. And to a person whose crime has not proved, they are punishing unnecessarily. And they knew it perfectly well that the moment I reach Portland, the court is going to free me. So delay it as long as possible. And finally, the moment the court released me, I went to jail. They made the last fascist attempt. The whole ground floor was empty, which had never been empty. 2 days I had been there, it was completely full with his staff people, officers, jailers. Suddenly the whole ground floor was empty. I asked the person who has brought me in. He said, I don't know what is the matter. Perhaps it is a change of shift. I said, don't try to be stupid. If it is a change of shift, then first the new people should arrive and then the older shift can go. A gap cannot be left, and in a jail there must be something more to it. And the man was so nervous, he said, I don't know anything more than that. But I said, you know more, because it is cold and you are perspiring. He left me inside the room where another man was waiting. For 12 days I was handcuffed. My legs were chained, and they knew from my medical history that my doctors had presented to them that my back is very bad. Exactly at the point where it hurts, for 12 days continuously they were tying a chain on my back, exactly on the point And I told them, keep it a little loose, and they said no. We have to follow orders from above. Even it was arranged that hurt my back as much as you can. And always there were two loaded guns by my side. But that day there was nobody, no chains, no loaded guns. I was left alone in the room, and the man said, I am coming within 2 minutes. I have to get the signature of my boss. And later on I came to know that there was no need of any boss to sign on the paper. My attorney says that is never done. Your signature is needed, but you are receiving your clothes back. What the boss has to do with it? But the reason was that in the room was placed a bomb. And the moment I left, the bomb was found. They missed because they could not figure out at what time I will be coming out of the court. It was a time bomb. Perhaps 15 minutes, 20 minutes they missed. This government is absolutely fascist. Few days before, the Mohammedan leader Gaddafi called Ronald Reagan Adolf Hitler number 2. I immediately informed Gaddafi that you are wrong. Ronald Reagan is Adolf Hitler number 1. Because he is millions of times more powerful than poor Adolf Hitler was. And he is continuously trying to bring the world to the brink of war, for the simple reason that America has now a protection against nuclear weapons, and Russia will take at least 1 or 2 years to create a protection. Now, nobody can throw a nuclear missile towards America. It will be returned back. America is in a hurry. The world should be aware of this man, Ronald Reagan, and his government. Because once Russia develops its protection, then there is no question of anybody winning the war. Right now, America is in a position to win the war. It will try to hurry it up before Russian scientists manage to create a protection against nuclear weapons. Kadhafi will prove wrong if the war happens. Then Ronald Reagan will be Adolf Hitler number one. I am not disappointed. I am simply disillusioned. I thought that the mask is the face, but I sat closely for 4 years and then more closely when they arrested me. And the way they behaved with me, and the way they forced things on me, made it clear that Adolf Hitler could not have done better. The American government should be exposed to the American people who are innocent, who are not aware what their government is doing, what is cooking. And the whole world should be made aware. That America is driving you towards a global society.
To your ideas. Which nation do you think would be more receptive?
Who told you that Americans are not receptive to my ideas? They are. The American government is not America. It was good and a beautiful experience to see that while I was being taken from the jail to the airport or from one jail to another jail, people were lining up, people who had never seen me, who had just seen me on the television, throwing flowers on the car, showing the sign of victory, and this was not only outside the prison, inside the prison, where there were 500, 600, 700 inmates. When I used to pass the corridors, they were shouting, "Bhagwan, we love you. We have been seeing on the television. We know they are being unjust and unfair to you." And when I left the prison, the same people were showing again from behind the bars their two fingers of victory. It is not right that Americans are not receptive to my ideas. In fact, America is the newest part of humanity, only 300 years old. Naturally, they are more receptive to my ideas than any other country. Because all other countries are burdened with thousands of years of conditionings, theological, political. The American mind is fresh, young, more available, more receptive. So you have to keep the distinction clear. Whenever I say anything against America, I am talking about the American politicians, the American government and bureaucrats. I am not talking about the American people. I have received nothing but love from them. And all over the world, wherever there are young people, wherever there is youth, freshness, and wherever there is any search for new spiritual values, there is receptivity. So I cannot name one nation particularly, because I have my sannyasins all over the world. One thing I can say, the youth is receptive. The children cannot understand yet, and the old are senile. They have passed beyond the boundary of understanding. They are clinging to their heritage because they don't see time left enough for them to change. The youth of the world is my country. And they are the future of the world. Tomorrow they will be in all powerful positions. I am taking care of today, but in taking care of today, the tomorrow is taken care of automatically. Tomorrow, young people will be the presidents and the chancellors and the premiers and the prime ministers all around the world. And I have a heart-to-heart synchronicity with the youth. I am preparing the youth for their future task when they can revolutionize the whole earth, when they can create one earth, dissolve all the nations and create one religiousness, dissolve all the churches, create one humanity, forget all about colors, we can create a paradise here on the earth. Only those who cannot create paradise on earth go on thinking paradise is somewhere beyond death. Those are impotent people. The authentic and real people will create paradise here. Who cares after death? And if you are intelligent, and if you are capable of living a life of joy and bliss, if you survive after death, you will continue to grow in your intelligence, in your love, in your silence, in your experience of truth. So there is no need to take note of death. But I will not name a country because I don't believe in countries. I would rather name whole world of young people as my world, which is receptive, absolutely receptive to me.
Bhagwan, were you making fun of the Americans by choosing to use so many Rolls Royces?
I did not purchase a single Rolls Royce. I do not purchase anything else. All those Rolls Royces were presented to me, but I don't accept any presents. So naturally they were all given to the commune. Certainly I wanted to know America, that living in a desert which was not used for 50 years, which was for sale for 50 years, and nobody was ready to purchase it. And he changed the desert into an oasis. He made houses with our own hands for 5,000 sannyasins to live with all modern comforts. He made our roads. He made gardens, lawns, we made lakes, we turned the whole scene. And the commune had not only 93 Rolls Royces, it had 300 more cars also. It had 100 buses also. It had 5 aeroplanes also. Because I am not a lover of poverty. And I wanted to prove that even in a desert, I am not a lover of power. And I wanted to prove that even in a desert, if people are intelligent, they can live as beautifully, as comfortably, as luxuriantly as possible. Nobody possessed anything, but everybody was able to use anything he wanted. We had made available all that modern world has got. Certainly, we were not trying to create any jealousy in America. On the contrary, we were trying to show to the people that poverty should be out of date. We were trying to show to the people that this commune is a model. There was no salary. No money was used in the commune, and just by preventing the use of money, we dissolved the differences between the rich and the poor. You may have millions of dollars, and I may not have a single dollar, but it doesn't matter. In the commune, you are not rich and I am not poor. In the commune, you cannot use money. The only thing you can do is to donate to the commune. Otherwise, hold it. But you are not rich. It was for the first time in the history of man that in a small group of 5,000 people, communism has really existed. Everybody's need was fulfilled. We had our own medical center. We had our own school. We had our own meditational university. Nobody was in a state of need. And there was no government. These 5,000 people lived out of love. Love was the only law. And in the commune there was no rape, no theft, no murder, no suicide. Nobody went mad. We had created a model for the whole universe. If people had not become jealous, if the politician had not become jealous and afraid, if they had supported the commune, would have been one of the glories of America. 50,000 people were coming to America to visit the commune every year. Have you ever heard any spiritual seeker going to America? We created in America a place where spiritual seekers from all over the world were coming, even from the East, where people go for spiritual service. America should have been proud. Just a little understanding, and the commune would have been for America an immensely significant phenomenon, and then many more communes would have developed in America on the same model. And for the first time, communism and anarchism were meeting together. Otherwise, they are against each other. Anarchism says no government. Government is the root cause of all evil. And communism believes in the dictatorship of the government, because without dictatorship you cannot destroy classes. And unless classes are destroyed, the society will remain divided in poor and the rich. In the commune it happened automatically. No government and communism, because nobody was rich and nobody was poor. And everybody was immensely happy. Our blissfulness became our problem. People could not believe that 5,000 people can work 12 hours a day, still can wake up early in the morning to meditate 1 hour, and after working 12 hours a day, in the night can dance and sing. It was a dream come true. But people started feeling that something is wrong. If we are so miserable, so much in suffering, so much in anxiety, and these people are living so beautifully, then either we are wrong or they are wrong. And naturally nobody wants to feel that he is wrong. And they were in majority. They destroyed the commune. They destroyed one of the beautiful flowering in their country. They will repent one day. I simply feel sorry for them. They missed an opportunity. Otherwise, we had created the answer for Soviet communism. We had created a far better communism than Soviet communism. Because Soviet communism has destroyed freedom, has destroyed people's individuality, has destroyed people's dignity. It has destroyed everything. It has simply distributed the power. It is a big concentration camp. If American politicians had any minds in their skulls, they would have seen the possibility that this commune can become an answer to Soviet Union. America has no philosophy. That is the poverty of America. It may have nuclear weapons, but it has no philosophy. Russia has a philosophy, a very dogmatic, fanatic religion, communism. And America is going to be defeated on every ground because it has nothing to fight against communist arguments. I had invited the president, the governor, the attorney general to come and see the commune before you decide against it. But those cowards never came to see. We were not writing a book against communism. We had already made a living reality against communism, a far superior communism, a communism which is not materialistic, a communism which has its spirituality as its base. I was disillusioned. I used to think that American leaders will be intelligent people. I am reminded when Ronald Reagan for the first time became president, he used to have an ape as his friend, as if human beings are not there anymore. And he had gone for a morning walk on the beach with the ape. An old man, seeing the scene, could not contain himself. He reached and he said, "Mr. President." And Ronald Reagan said, "Yes, what do you want to say?" And the man said, "You shut up. I am talking to the Mr. President." He was thinking the ape is Mr. President. My experience was that perhaps that old man was right.
Book one. If your philosophy, if your philosophy influenced by the Western psychoanalytic tradition?
No. On the contrary, my philosophy is contributing to the Western psychoanalytic sciences. The Western psychoanalytic approach ends with mind. It does not believe beyond the mind. real being is beyond the mind. This is one of the causes that Western psychoanalysis has not been able to help anybody. There have been people for 10 years, 12 years going under psychoanalytic processes, and still they have not reached anywhere. You will be surprised to know that the Western psychoanalyst as a profession commits suicide in double numbers than any other profession. Goes mad in double numbers than any other profession. This is something great. These are the psychoanalysts. And each psychoanalyst once in a while needs to be psychoanalyzed by another psychoanalyst. It is very superficial. In the East, we never developed anything like psychoanalysis. What we developed is mind transcendence. In the Eastern approach, the mind is the disease. So whatever you do with it, at the most you can make it normally sick. You can keep it within boundaries. So there are only two kinds of people: abnormally sick and normally sick. The function of psychoanalysis is to bring the abnormally sick back into the fold of the normally sick. In the East, we have never thought in 10,000 years of anything like psychoanalysis. What we have thought is mind transcendence, and that's what meditation is. Rather than trying to make mind healthy, it is better to go beyond mind. Where is the source of all health, all wisdom, all sanity? And once you are beyond the mind, then the mind becomes such a good servant. You cannot find a single instance in the whole history of the East that a meditator has gone and committed suicide, that a meditator has become mad. No analysis is needed for years. Just very simple method of watching your mind. Just being a witness to whatever goes into your mind. And a great transformation happens. As you watch the mind, you start feeling suddenly you are not the mind. You can watch it. It is just there on the screen. A movie screen, a TV screen. Thoughts are moving, dreams are moving, projects are moving, memories, imagination, you can see from a distance. And as you become settled into this distance, you are surprised that what these thoughts can do to you. You are not part of the mind. This gives you such a relief and the moment it becomes deepened that I am not the mind, the mind starts cooling down. Thoughts are less, memories are less, imaginations are less. Just witnessing, and the moment comes that mind becomes empty, there is only a white screen left, and that is the perfect hell. Out of this clarity, to live life is a delight, is a joy. I have not taken anything from Western psychoanalysis. I am trying to give something to Western psychoanalysis which it is missing, very badly missing. I have come in contact with many kinds of psychotherapists, psychoanalysts, and they are in the same boat as you are. They are not in any way different. They suffer from same kinds of anxieties, fears. Even the founder of psychoanalysis, Sigmund Freud, suffered from fear so much that you will be surprised to know. He never went by the side of any graveyard because it reminds of death. He never wanted to hear somebody informing him that a friend has died because that reminds him that he will die. Even the word death, as he became older, just the word death was enough. And he used to fall into a coma for a few minutes unconscious. His mouth foaming. And this man is the founder of psychoanalysis. Can you think Gautam Buddha afraid of death in this way? Can you think, Lao Tzu, to be afraid of death in this way? And all his psychoanalysis is nothing but his own sexual repression, because everything that you bring to him becomes a sexual symbol. Anything, you cannot find a thing which is not sexual. The man is simply mad. His own disciples, great disciples, Jung and Adler, left him simply because of this fixation on sex. Everything is not sex. Life consists of many more things. And Adler founded another school of psychoanalysis. But the same mistake, his whole idea is will to power. Bring him anybody and he will find that he is suffering from will to power. Now sex is replaced by will to power. He has again forgotten that life is many things. It is multidimensional. Jung founded another school, analytical psychology. And he tries to reduce everything to mythologies, ancient mythologies. That your unconscious is remembering your past life. They are surfacing. Nobody has been helpful in transforming man, in giving him real health, sanity, serenity, tranquility, balance. East can contribute much. Because in the East, the thing is totally different. We have never taken mind seriously. We have always thought that there is something beyond mind. And unless that space beyond is found, mind cannot be controlled. Who will control it? Something higher than mind is needed. And the Western psychology does not believe in anything higher than mind. And mind is crazy. Then how to make this mind sane? It is impossible, but it is a good business. Jews are very good in finding beautiful businesses. Jesus was a Jew. he has founded the greatest business in the world, Christianity. And Jews can never forget themselves because they unnecessarily crucified their own boy and missed a great chance. The greatest firm and since then they have been trying to take revenge in every way. Karl Marx is another Jew. He founded another business, communism. Now half of the humanity is communist. Sigmund Freud is another Jew who finds the most highly paid profession, psychoanalysis. But nobody is interested in man. They are earning beautifully. I have nothing to learn from them. They have nothing to teach. They have to learn something from the East. Because the basic point is to find something above and beyond mind. And man's consciousness should be centered on the beyond point, then mind can be controlled very easily. You can see my sannyasi. You will not find them suffering from the same phobias as the ordinary man. You will not find them needing psychoanalysis. If they are meditating, they are masters of their own life. And mind is a bad master, but a good servant. Just you have to find the right master within yourself.
Bhagwan, what is so special about what you teach is it condones almost all forms of self-expression.
First, nobody in the whole history of humanity has allowed man's nature total freedom. It was always with conditions. Man's nature has never been accepted lovingly. It has been condemned as sin. All the religions have been doing that criminal act of condemning man's nature. Although by condemning you cannot change man's nature, but you can poison it. And they have poisoned it. So man is living in a kind of limbo. Neither he can be natural, because then all the moral teachings in his mind disturb him that you are committing sin. Nor he can follow the moral teachings, because the nature has its own way. Its full, its gravity is great, and man is torn apart. All the religions has created schizophrenic humanity. It's split about each and everything. For example, Mahatma Gandhi in India, in his ashram, had five great principles. First principle was no taste. Eat, but don't taste. Now, you are creating unnecessary trouble for poor human beings. If they eat, they will taste. If they taste, it is sin. If they don't eat, they will die out of hunger. To destroy their taste, he used a certain leaf of a tree, a neem tree, which are the bitterest. He will make everybody to eat neem leaves with his food, so the taste is destroyed and everything becomes bitter. This is thought to be spirituality. But this idea of no taste is not new. Buddhism follows it. Jainism follows it. Hinduism follows it. So for thousands of years it has been there. I don't see that if you eat tastefully, you are committing any crime. Just don't eat too much. Just don't be an American. Because in America there are 30 million people in the hospitals dying of overeating, and 30 million exactly are dying of hunger in the streets. Now, any intelligent person can just let these people meet and tell their stories to each other. 60 million people can be saved from death without wasting any money, anything. Just a little understanding. All the religions about all the senses of man, about his body, about his love, have been condemnatory. They have spoiled human life and its joy. They have destroyed the Zorba in you. And that is my basic difference. I want to revive Zorba in you. With dignity and with respect. Because to me, unless you are an authentic Zorba, you can never become a Buddha. If you have not lived totally the life of your body, you don't have any base for your spiritual life. The life of the body becomes the foundation for the temple of your spiritual life. They are not against each other. They are together. They are one project. Nobody has allowed man to be totally free. Expressive. They have always been repressive ideologies around in different names, but something has to be repressed. No religion has accepted this world as sacred, this life as sacred. They are all in favor of the other world. And you have to sacrifice this world and this life to attain to the other world. And that other world is just an idea. No evidence exists for it. And people have sacrificed this life and they have not gained anything. I say this life is sacred. This body is sacred. This world is sacred. And there is no other world. The other world is hidden in this world. The deeper you go into it, you will find it. Move deeper into this. Here. Now. It is a totally different vision of spirituality. It is also unique because I am not a god. I am not a savior. I am not a prophet. I am not a messenger. I am just a human being as you are. All your religions have been founded by people who were in some way or other megalomaniac, who were in some way or other super egoist. They pretended to be very special. The only begotten Son of God, the incarnation of God, the messenger of God. They were not persons amongst you. You were far away in the dark valleys, and they were far away in the sunlit peaks. You can only worship them. And naturally, humanity has remained in darkness because everybody thought it is beyond us. We are not sons of God. We are not incarnations of God. We are not prophets. We are not messengers. Those were special people. If they could manage to do something, it was possible, but we are ordinary human beings. Misery is our lot. We have to exist the way we are existing. Darkness is our destiny. My unique point is that nobody was a messenger and nobody was a prophet. Nobody was an incarnation of God because there is no God as such. They were all human beings, just pretenders. Preposterous, trying to be special than you, higher than you, holier than you, and they spoiled millions of people's lives. I want to say to you that I'm just amongst you, and if I can attain to my innermost light, if I can attain to my eternal being, it is a proof that you can attain it too. Because you are as capable, as potential as I am. There is no difference. I am not speaking from some higher place. I am just amongst you. Hence I don't call you my disciples, I call you my friends. And it is only a question of time. Today you are asleep, tomorrow you may be awake. Yesterday I was asleep, today I am awake. It is not much of a difference.
Bhagwan, why have your teachings attracted so many followers? And why are women particularly attracted to your teaching?
Truth has a magnetic force in it. It always attracts, particularly those who are young and fresh, particularly those who are not burdened with old rubbish and garbage and junk, who are capable to see, receptive to understand. That's why so many people, without any special effort to attract them, have come close to me. I had started the journey alone, and then people started coming, and the caravan became bigger and bigger. Now it is surrounding the whole earth. You are asking why more women are attracted. First, all the religions have condemned women. I am the first man who is trying to compensate all the harm and the wounds that had been done by the past and its so-called religious people. My respect to women is equal to men. This has not been the case in the past. Gautam Buddha, a man I respect, I love, but that does not mean I agree with him on every point. Denied for years initiation for women. He was not ready to initiate women, only men. Why? The woman is not so spiritual. It's strange. The same people who go on saying that the soul is neither man nor woman, on the other hand, they start saying that the woman is less spiritual than men. Only bodies are different. The souls cannot be different. And now we know more scientifically, a man can be changed into a woman just by plastic surgery. Then what Buddha will do? Will he initiate the man or not? Because he is a woman. But the plastic surgery cannot do any harm to the soul. Many women are changing into men. What Buddha is going to do? In fact, he will not be even able to decide that this woman is really a woman or just a case of plastic surgery. I have one of my sannyasins, a great plastic surgeon, Swami Leeladhar. He has changed many men into women, many women into men. And finally he got fed up with this changing. He asked me that I had taken sannyas to drop this business. But you tell me that you continue because if people want to change, that is their right and they should be helped. Why they should wait for one life and in next life perhaps, and that is always a perhaps, you may again become a woman or again become a man. Even Buddha denied, Mahavir denied, that no woman can reach enlightenment from woman's body. And I do not see the logic at all. And Mahavir was a great logician. But I can see the male chauvinist mind working behind it. There is no logic at all why a woman cannot become enlightened. Every woman first has to practice religious discipline so that in the next life she is born as a man. And then begins the growth towards enlightenment. And the same is true about all religions. I say to you that it does not matter whether you are man or woman. What matters is whether you are centered in yourself, silent, whether you are capable of becoming a witness to your own thoughts and emotions, moods, it does not matter whether your body is of man or woman. There is not much difference between man's body and woman's body. The difference is very little, which has nothing to do with his spirituality. I have accepted women for the first time on the equal basis as men. I am in favor of women's liberation because I know that unless women are liberated, man will never be liberated. Their liberation is together. Because they are two sides of the same coin. Naturally, many more women have come. Because for centuries they were denied. They were insulted. They were never accepted equal to men. Naturally, more and more women will be coming. And only those men will be here who are ready to accept women as their equal. No male chauvinist can remain around me. It is a family of equal people. With equal dignity, if women were respected in the past, humanity would not have been in such a mess as it is today. Because women are half of the humanity. Half of the humanity has remained undignified life. Uneducated, deprived of all freedom, all movement, we have hampered, handicapped ourselves. We have destroyed our own half. And if we are in misery, then who is to be blamed? I am all in favor of women's liberation, but not the way the women's liberation movement is going on. That is taking reactionary attitudes. It is not real revolution. It is trying to imitate men. And remember, imitation never makes you equal. Imitation at the most will make you a carbon copy. But the original is original. Now the women are smoking cigarettes like men, dressing like men, using four-letter words like men. Great progress. Someday they will start pissing like men. That will be the ultimate freedom of women. But this is all idiotic. When I say women's liberation, I have my own meaning. I mean the woman has to remain woman, has to keep her distinctions clear, her distances clear, because the more distant the woman is from man, the more attractive they are to each other. The polarities should be as far as possible. Then there is greater tension and greater attraction. If they become similar, they will lose attraction. Human society will become flat. There will be no romance. There will be no poetry. There will be nothing adventurous in human relationships. Equality is one thing. Similarity is totally different. Do not make them mean the same. Don't try to be similar to men. Equal opportunity for your growth. But that means you are going to remain unique and dissimilar. You are not man. And you need not be man. Because man has nothing special. You both are unique and both are complementary. And as far as the spiritual growth is concerned, Gautam Buddha's fear was not the woman but sexual repression. His minds were all sexually repressed. And the fear was if women are initiated, then the monks and the women will be so close, there is fear. Fear that the monks will lose their celibacy. If celibacy remains something spiritual, then man and woman cannot be together in a spiritual path. But celibacy is unnatural. And absolutely leads to perversion. Man and woman should be together. Should be in deep love. Should help each other to grow. Their help will be a great nourishment. That's my experiment. All old experiments have failed. And I can see why they have failed. They denied half of the humanity. This experiment cannot fail because we are not denying anybody. We are not denying anything. We are not repressing anything. We are trying to make an orchestra of all the instruments, creating an organic unity of all the instincts, bodily, mental, spiritual, of men, of women, and making it an absolutely natural phenomenon.
Bhagwan, are you mocking the West in the same way you mocked the traditional gurus in India?
I will mock everywhere the traditional gurus, because I am against the traditional mind. The traditional mind is the greatest block in progress, and the traditional gurus are the guards of the traditional mind. They protect it. Galileo was called by the Pope that you have to change in your book that the earth goes round the sun, because the Bible says the sun goes round the earth, and Bible cannot be untrue. Old Galileo, 75 years old, sick, almost dying, but he must have had a great sense of humor. He said, I am perfectly willing, but your honor, I must remind you, even if I change the sentence, the earth will still go round the sun. It won't take any note of my poor book. It does not read. He changed the sentence, and in the footnote he wrote it that it does not matter. I am a Christian and I believe in the Bible and I believe in the Pope, so I am changing their statement. But it changes nothing. The earth still goes round the sun. The traditional gurus everywhere are against progress. The reason is that every progressive statement, every new discovery challenges their scriptures. And the problem is, even if one thing in their scriptures which they are calling holy, written by God Himself, is wrong, that creates great problems. That means God can write wrong things. That also means that if one statement is wrong, perhaps other statements may also be wrong. It creates suspicion. And the traditional priests depend on faith. Any doubt is dangerous. And all progress depends on doubt. All science depends on doubt. There is no meeting ground between doubt and faith. I'm helpless, but I have to say the truth as it is. Whether it goes against the traditions or against the traditional gurus, I don't care. my devotion is towards truth, not towards any Bible or any Quran or any Veda. I have seen through all these religious scriptures, they are so full of bullshit. That is, finally, everything in them is going to be proved wrong. Not a single thing will remain right in your holy scriptures. For the simple reason, because the people who wrote them had no idea of science, had no idea of what is going to happen in the future. Even people like Aristotle, who is thought to be the father of Western logic, writes in his book that women have less feet than men. And he had two wives. He could have asked wife number one or wife number two, whichever was less horrible, to open her mouth and just counted the teeth. But the very scientific spirit was absent. And the father of logic writes the sentence that women have less teeth. It was assumed as a matter of fact that women cannot have anything equal to men. So obviously they must be having less teeth than men. There is no need even to count. And I am surprised that for 2,000 years nobody has tried. Perhaps I am the first man who has tried. Ask few women, please let me count your feet. And they will say, what? And said that, look at this book. And I am more surprised that even women have not counted. At least they should have counted and countered Aristotle that this is nonsense what you are writing. But for thousands of years before Aristotle it was believed, for thousands of years afterwards it was believed, and everything in your so-called holy scriptures is going to prove to be rubbish. I don't want to hurt anybody, but I cannot just be polite. Because that politeness will mean hypocrisy and nothing else. I have to say the truth exactly as it is. Who cares?
Who do you think is the greatest Western philosopher?
Friedrich Nietzsche. It will surprise you. But Friedrich Nietzsche is the most misunderstood philosopher. And he was more misunderstood because Adolf Hitler accepted him as his master. He is not a fascist. And no other philosopher in the West has such a deep insight into things. And his approach is so multidimensional that he could not write in the ordinary way philosophical treatises are written. He wrote in maxims because he had so much to write. He had to write only in condensed forms. That became one of the reasons of misunderstanding him. But now there is a revival about Nietzsche. And I was hoping that there will be a revival. Because greater a philosopher is, the more possibility is that his contemporaries will not understand it. It will take at least 100 years for people to understand him. A genius is always 100 years ahead of his time. Now there is a revival. People are reading again and finding new light, new vision, new insights in Friedrich Nietzsche. There have been many great philosophers in the West, but because you are asking me only one name, I have no other choice except Friedrich Nietzsche.
Bhagwan, why did you choose to come to Crete? Are your cousin Zarkus enthusiast?
Not Kazan Zarkus. But I am a lover of Zorba. It is a tragedy that Kazan Zarkus himself could not live a life which he has created in Zorba. Reading Zorba the Greek, you will think the man who wrote it must have lived like this. You are wrong. The man who wrote it was just the opposite, miserable. He wrote it as a consolation. This is the way he wanted to live, but he could not. Kazan Zarkus is sick. I am not interested in him, but I am certainly interested in Zorba. To me, Zorba is the symbol of an authentically uninhibited human animal. And unless a man lives like a Zorba, totally and intensively, there is no possibility for him to rise above into the higher realms of consciousness. I said that it is a tragedy because Zorba the Greek is only half a book, because Zorba is only half a man. Somebody of the creative talents of Kazantzakis should write the second part of Zorba. It should be Zorba the Buddha, in which Zorba starts moving higher. Instead of living into animal instinct, it starts living into super consciousness, into compassion, into meditation. Unless Zorba becomes enlightened, the book will remain incomplete. I have never written a book. Although there are 400 books on my name, but I have not written anything. There are just thoughts collected. But I did something greater. That is, I create real Zorbas into my sannyasins and help them to become Buddhas. I do not care what happens to my teachings after I am gone. All my care is what happens to my people while I am here. I want them to become complete, whole, Zorba the Buddha. And I will not leave you unless you become complete. I will haunt you.
Bhagwan, the last question. Do you have sexual relations with your followers now or in the past?
My God. I can say only one thing. I have been a Zorba. And And without being a Zhorva, there is no possibility of becoming a Buddha. But if you ask about the Buddha, I can talk easily to you, because then only I am concerned. As far as I am concerned, I am an open book. But to ask about the Zhorva, is not right, because somebody else is also concerned in it. My many babulinas. No, it will not be right unless I take their permission, and it will be a difficult task because there are so many and all over the world. But I can understand your curiosity. I am absolutely a natural man, without any inhibition. And I have lived my life burning the stars from both the ends together. But it is over. Zhorva is my past. Buddha is my present. But the question is significant. You are courageous to ask it. There are many other journalists who want to ask it, but don't have the guts to ask it. The reason you could ask it you may know it or not, but I can feel it, your love towards me is great. Only love can ask anything without any fear. There are many journalists who have been trying to ask the same question in a roundabout way. But whenever somebody asks a question in a roundabout way, I always give an answer in a more roundabout way. If anybody else had asked it, I would have called him a peeping Tom. but I will not call that teaching. I will just tell a small story in the end. Three old men used to meet in the park every evening. Perhaps all the three were retired journalists. One was 75, the other was 85, the third was 95. They were great friends. One evening, the youngest of the three was looking very sad, very dull, very down. The other two asked him, "What is the matter with you? Why you are so silent and dull and sad?" He said, "Don't remind me. I am trying to forget it. But it goes on and on and on." But they said, "We don't know what it is. First tell us what you are trying to forget." He said, "It is such undignified thing. But you are friends, old friends. I will tell you. It happened that I was looking into the keyhole of the bathroom because a beautiful lady who was a guest in the house was taking a bath. And my mother came and caught me red-handed." The other two laughed. They said, "This happens to everybody. In childhood, this is nothing and there is no need to be bothered by it now that you are 75. The man said, "What are you saying? This happened this morning." This was a shock. The second said, "But what is happening to me is even worse. For 3 days, I have not been able to make love to my wife. Whenever I prepare and get ready, she simply turns to the other side and says, 'Not tonight, I'm suffering from headache.' It has been going on for 3 days." The oldest man said, "But first you tell us, because I know your love. What kind of love do you make? Tell it in detail." Because the other fool does not know. So he had to tell. He said, "Not much. I just hold her hand and press it 3 times. Every night. But for 3 nights, no love. It hurts." The third man said, "You are both idiots. You don't know my trouble. This morning when I was just going to make love to my wife, she said, "You idiot, what are you doing?" I said, "What I am doing? I am making love." She said, "This is the third time in the night. Neither you sleep, nor you allow me to sleep." I said, "My God, it seems I am losing memory." Okay.